Thank you, Carrie, for that marvelous music. We certainly appreciate your musicianship. And thank you, Dale, for coming all the way from the East Coast just to render that greet. Dale is an aficionado of Starship Galactica and Admiral Adama in his speeches. And Dale usually ends with, "So say we all." I have to tell you that I'm under extreme pressure up here today because of the acts of the worship committee. I submitted this topic to them, and they immediately sent back to me the one pager we have on how to stand in this pulpit. And your present, this is a house of worship, not a political rally, it says. And it says that your presentation must be spiritual and uplifting. And I went to Wanda and I said, "Wanda, I don't think I can do that." And she said, "Well, Bob, we'd like to see you squirm, so go ahead and try." Now, you people on the worship committee who are grading my paper, I want you to understand one thing. When I am contentious, when I am growling, and when I am dismissive, and when I'm sarcastic, that's my way of being spiritual. I guess I'm home. Well, here we are. The term oligarchy in its Greek roots signifies the rule of the few, or the conflict between the few and the many. It also signified in the ancient Greek the conflict between the wealthy and the working classes. In contrast, however, democracy supposedly denotes the rule of the many or the rule of the people, albeit a representative democracy, with meaningful and effective citizen involvement and control. So defined, I posit that this generation of Americans is permitting our country to undergo a dangerous slide from democracy into oligarchy. My purpose today is to illustrate that fact. Most of us are familiar with the experiment, and I didn't pick out the children's story, with the experiment that when a frog is suddenly dropped into hot water, it usually jumps right out of the pot. However, when it's placed in cold water and the pot is slowly warmed, it becomes lethargic and may remain immobile until it's well cooked. We American people are slowly being cooked out of any meaningful participation in our governance due to our lack of effective participation in those institutions which determine our health, our well-being, and our funding of social justice. Most, if not all, present here subscribe to the belief that liberal religion and social justice, the social justice that we hold dear, thrive best when nurtured in the crucible of democracy. We boofers excel in discussion, focus groups, debate, community outreach within our limited means. But how do we measure up in addressing the tyranny of the oligarchs who deprive our social institutions of the funding, institutional mechanisms, and legal structure to provide social justice to the many? A famous bank robber was once asked, "Why do you rob banks?" And he quoted, he said, "Because that's where the money is." Now let's talk about where the big and meaningful money and power lies in America today. Alan Greenspan, in testimony before the Senate Banking Committee in the year 2002, stated, "An infectious greed seems to grip much of our business community. is not that we humans have become more greedy than in the past. It is that the avenues to express greed have grown so enormously. Those avenues were the development, initially by several financial houses on Wall Street, of exotic and toxic instruments known collectively as derivatives. Later, after deregulation in the Clinton and G.W. Bush years, major banks were allowed to join in that lottery. Those instruments included credit default swaps, collateralized debt or obligations, collateralized mortgage obligations, and various arbitrage instruments. 13 institutions controlled the derivative market. They accumulated enormous wealth for their managers and traders without producing goods or hardly anything of value for the American economy. Especially egregious were the synthetic and are the synthetic instruments that I've taken note of. Take note of this. The United States at one time had more than 25,000 bank charters. Today we have about 8,000. Now, after failures and mergers executed through bailout money and low interest rates out of the window of the Federal Reserve, we now have 6 oligarchs remaining. That is 6 mega financial bank combination institutions. Those 6 control or handle assets equaling in value, very astonishingly, equal to 60% of this country's gross domestic product. They are the Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, that is, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley. In 1987, the 5 top officers of the now defunct Bear Stearns were collectively pocketing $20.3 million per year. The year before the collapse of Bear Stearns, the 2 top owners were paid $15.3 million each. Trader Alan Wheat of Credit Suisse First Boston was making $9 million a year in 1992 on derivative sales. In the first half of this year, 2010, Goldman Sachs set aside $9.3 billion, 43% of its revenues, to pay salaries, benefits, and bonuses. Citigroup awarded trader Andrew Hall a $100 million payout bonus at the height of this crisis in 2008. We read in the news just this last week that 17 financial companies made questionable payouts to employees totaling $1.58 billion immediately after accepting billions of dollars of taxpayers' money. I say again, at that time, they paid out $1.58 billion. The fact of accumulation of wealth alone does not make these financial institutions into true oligarchs. They employ their wealth to destroy democracy by gaining enormous influence and control over both Congress and the executive branch of government, and indirectly through their unstatesmanlike moral fiber, exert undue influence upon the philosophy of the United States Supreme Court. The gap between rich and poor in this country is ever widening, with resulting decrease in social justice and the standard of living lowers for the middle and lower classes of our society. One example of undue influence is the recent financial reform legislation, which worked its way through Congress and went to the President's desk, I believe only last week. It became a much watered-down Band-Aid, which will not prevent the oligarchs from again wrecking our economy in a few years, despite the establishment of an oversight committee. They successfully fought the provision which required the banks to spin off their trading and derivatives, where they are now making profits of $23 billion per year. Of the approximate 2,000 lobbyists working on financial reform last month, that bill, more than 1,400 had been congressional staffers or worked in the executive branch, and 73 had been members of Congress. $600 million was spent lobbying that one bill since January of 2000. Two significant factors or numbers. $3.5 billion was spent on lobbyists in general in this last year. There is a group of 60 House Democrats who call themselves the, quote, New Financial Coalition, and they bill themselves as being, quote, business friendly. 10 of them have received campaign contributions ranging from $405,000 down to $113,000 in this last cycle. Walt Minnick's not one of those. Now, what does all this have to do with Unitarianism and social justice? Many of us gathered here this morning may perceive that the Tea Party movement is wrong-headed and misfocused. But the Tea Party folk have figured out that something is not going well in this country. They have figured out where the money is, they have figured out where the action is, and they are holding rallies. They are protesting in the streets. They are engaged in the public eye through media exposure. They are getting involved and influencing elections. They are having an influence upon how our legislators think and vote. Can we, the self-described, educated, well-meaning liberals, not get more involved than we are now are? I'm going to ask each of you to raise your hands to three questions, and don't let me embarrass you because I'm going to flunk on these questions and you won't see my hand go up, but I'm sure going to put it on you. Raise your hand if you have attended two Republican or Democrat or Libertarian County Central Committee meetings in the last 5 years. Well, Liz, I didn't want you to show up. You ruined it. Look around you. One hand went up. Oh, two. Oh, well, hallelujah. Okay, the second question. Raise your hand if you have attended a state or national political party convention in the last 5 years. Well, there's still a lot of sinners out here. Now, this one. Every legislative candidate for office in Idaho from either party claims to support funding for education. Please raise your hand if you have ever looked one candidate in the eye and said, Mr. or Ms. Candidate, you say you're for money for education. Which of my taxes are you wanting to raise? Or which of our fine programs for people are you going to cut? How many of you have asked them that question right straight in the eye? Well, Dr. Richard Slaughter has, and two more people. Oh, Jeanette, she's a troublemaker anyhow. Well, I don't put us down. Many of us are doing various good works. But are we effectively engaging ourselves in the great economic issues of the day, or even the environmental issues of the day at a higher level? Or do we simply shuffle the chairs on the deck of the Titanic on lesser undertakings? Let me shift to an example on the Idaho scene, which should foster concern. There's a wealthy and influential owner of a major company in Idaho Falls. And he has, over the last 8 years, controlled or directly or greatly influenced the election of two of our Supreme Court justices, one district judge, and our current attorney general. And he has done that by setting up sham website organizations that have no members, and not reporting his involvement. And his exercise of wealth has a chilling effect on every judge or office holder in Idaho. Where is our outcry? American democracy is in great peril when both wealth and political influence are concentrated in the hands of a few greedy people. Those people have no concern for the common welfare. Now, in closing, let me remind ourselves of four of our seven Unitarian Universalist principles. One is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Another is justice, equality, and compassion in human relations. Here, the middle part of this one. The right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and our society at large. And the fourth, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. And then look at the world outside these walls. Look away from this sacred space and this sacred time, and I ask you to ask yourselves and each other, are we living our faith in action, taking our UU principles to heart, and making a real, meaningful difference where it really counts? That is, the world outside these walls. What do we plan to do to restore democracy and government of and by the people in order to reach a more just world? An America where cries for social justice are translated into effective citizen action. Namaste, shalom, salam, may it be.